For the last 5 weeks, we've been looking at diseases that the book of Numbers demonstrates sometimes affects our faith. And the idea is that if we're aware of these diseases and the symptoms that they show, then maybe we can head them off at the pass. We can deal with them, we can get them out in the open, deal with them before they set in and cause too much damage. The diseases we've been talking about are things like complaining, jealousy, egoism, putting yourself higher than you should and the despair that that often leads to, impatience and discouragement. But the fact is, we are constantly surrounded by things that cause illness. We know that's true physically, especially at this time of year when the flu is always a problem, when colds are always a problem. The kids go back to school and they bring colds home. People gather for Thanksgiving and Christmas and they spread germs around. Except, of course, this year we're told there is no Thanksgiving and there is no Christmas. Some of us are crazy enough to go ahead and have Thanksgiving and Christmas anyway. My hat's off to you. We do what we can to prevent the spread of disease, but there are germs all around. I remember when I had my infection in my hip, and I seemed to think it was a big deal, and my family doctor said, "Look, Dave, there's germs all over the place. You've got so much staph on your skin that if you knew about it, you'd be like Howard Hughes, washing yourself all the time." Now we've got COVID to worry about. Although the interesting thing about COVID is they say that while the cold and the flu can be spread by children, they catch it at school, they bring it home, they say the COVID infection doesn't work that way. The virus that causes COVID can infect children, usually without symptoms, but it doesn't spread from children to adults. It does spread from adult to adult. Now they're discovering it actually can spread from adults to animals. They've had cats and dogs come down with COVID. That a tiger at a zoo that came down with COVID. So there's diseases all over the place. So you have to wonder, should I be afraid to go outside at all? I mean, our media, our entertainment people, our people in government, many people in government, not all, fortunately, have most people so scared of COVID that they're afraid to go out. And even in their own homes, they're wearing masks. I see people driving in their cars, nobody else in the car, and they're wearing a mask. I don't understand that exactly. Some people have vowed they're never going anywhere, and they have stayed home. And I remember back in March, someone issued a warning to the media saying, "You will be responsible for the hysteria that you're causing over this virus." Of course, they didn't listen, and they're still causing hysteria. But fortunately, we are not as vulnerable as we think we are. Even though some people don't believe that, Howard Hughes, I mentioned him, he became famous for the measures he took to try to live in a bubble. I remember as a kid hearing adults talk about how dangerous it was to treat your children as if they had to live in a bubble, and especially if you don't want them to get allergies, if you don't want them to get sick, you've got to put them in this bubble, and then they become adults, and the first thing that happens when they go out in the real world is they start developing allergies, and they start getting sick, and because they haven't built up an immune system. My uncle, where we used to go up in English Center, there weren't many people around in English Center. They lived on a lane, and whenever we heard a car coming up the lane, it was a gravel lane. We always looked out the window because we figured it in. They had to be coming here. There was one other house further up the lane, the Mahuskys, and they had lots of kids, and the kids were always outside in the wintertime, barefoot, no coat, playing in the dirt. And my cousin used to wonder, why is it that they're always in school? They never get sick. Meanwhile, he and other kids, when the flu went around, the colds went around, they were always sick. They were always catching it. Mr. Mahusky said, and my uncle used to repeat, you have to eat a peck of dirt every year to keep your immune system healthy. I'm not sure I agree with his diagnosis or his prescription. One thing, that kind of medicine doesn't cost you a whole lot of money, but it certainly seemed to work for them. They had dirty feet, but they didn't catch cold. I've known people that go to medical school, and we had this problem in seminary when they had courses on counseling. You start reading the books about diseases or about counseling issues, and all of a sudden you discover you've got them all. You've got this disease that only 1 in 1,000 people has, but I have all the symptoms. I must have that. That must be what it is. I've tried everything else and it hasn't worked. Now I've discovered what I have wrong with me. And the teacher says, that's not what you have wrong with you. This is what you have wrong with you. Because fear is one of the greatest contagions of all. When people are afraid, everybody seems to catch that disease of fear. And fear is bad medicine. It leads you to do things that are counterproductive. They're even saying regarding allergies, you know, peanut allergies used to be a big one. And they're saying one way to keep your children from developing peanut allergies is to give them peanut butter as soon as you can. As young as you can. The sooner you give them peanut butter, then their system discovers there's nothing wrong with peanuts, and it does not develop an allergy. Now, I'm not saying take my advice because I don't know. But I do discover as I talk to people that the more people try to protect themselves from the common ailments that surround us, the less equipped they are to deal with those things when they do strike. And the reason is because God created our bodies with an immune system, with an ability to fight off invaders, because that's what viruses and things like that are. They're invaders. They come into our system, they disrupt things, and our system has a natural way of recognizing them and fighting them off. But what we don't realize is that God also gave to our soul an immune system. And that's what our lessons are about today. We have two episodes. The first episode that I'm going to talk about is in Numbers 21 and 31. Both of these chapters deal with attacks. Nation states that see the threat coming. Israel is making its way up from Egypt. For 38 years, they've heard about this group of people, this nation of 1 million people swarming like locusts across the Sinai Peninsula and up through what today we would call Jordan, making its way up to the river Jordan to cross into Canaan. So far, they have asked two nations for permission to pass. They asked Edom and they asked Moab. Both nations refused. But one of those two nations actually attacked. When they came to the land of Edom, they asked the people of Edom, "You're our brothers. Your ancestor Esau was a brother, a twin brother to our ancestor Jacob, who was called Israel. Please let us pass. We're not going to touch anything. If we do any damage, if we drink any water, we'll pay for it." "No, you can't do it. Please, you know, we promise that we won't do any damage, we'll pay for anything we take." And Edom gathered its forces together, and they stood there, and they said, no, if you come, we'll attack. And so Israel, if you remember, they said, okay, and they took a detour. The detour brought them to Moab. And when they came to Moab, they said, please let us pass. And the Moabites said, no. But unlike Edom, they gathered their army and they didn't wait for Israel to take a detour. They attacked. And when they attacked, Israel fought them off. Now the other nation states around there, and when I say nations, they're more like metropolitan areas. They're not nations that cover a whole big area. It's a metropolitan area with its own army that protects, mainly it protects its economy, because that's what armies have usually had to do. And so when we get to chapter 21, we read these words. The king of Arad, the Canaanite, who dwelt in the south, heard that Israel was coming on the road to Atharim. He fought against Israel and took some of them prisoners. So Israel made a vow to the Lord and said, if you will indeed deliver this people into my hand, I will utterly destroy their cities. The Lord listened to the voice of Israel and delivered up the Canaanites, and they utterly destroyed them and their cities. So the name of that place was called Hormah. Hormah means totally destroyed. I want you to notice a couple things about this story. First of all, this was a battle that Israel did not bring on themselves. This was a battle that the king of Arad initiated. He initiated it because he heard they were coming. He didn't want to wait for them to come. He took prisoners. And taking prisoners was an act of war. So Israel took the initiative. They prayed to God. Isn't this interesting? I think this is the first time so far in the Exodus where we read that the Israelites faced a problem and they actually prayed about it. Up until this time, when they faced a problem, their natural reaction was to complain. But maybe they're learning something. Instead of complaining, they pray. They say, Lord, they've taken some of our people prisoner, and we want them back. And if you help us to defeat the king of Arad, then we promise we will not keep anything for ourselves. We will totally destroy them all. God listened to them, and he gave them the victory. The prisoners were freed. And the Israelites devoted everything else to destruction. Then, if we go to the latter part of the 21st chapter, since we dealt with the rest of the chapter last week, we see a similar situation with the Amorites. Israel, verse 21, Israel sent messengers to Sihon, king of the Amorites, saying, let me pass through your land. We will not turn aside into fields or vineyards. We will not drink water from wells. We'll go by the king's highway until we've passed through your territory. And here, I was mistaken. It was not with Moab. It was with Sihon that the king decided not only could they not pass, but we're going to go to war with them. So Sihon would not allow Israel to pass through his territory. He gathered his people together, went out against Israel in the wilderness. He came to Jahaz and fought against them. Then Israel defeated him with the edge of the sword and took possession of his land from the Arnon to the Jabbok as far as the people of Ammon. For the border of the people of Ammon was fortified. So they took the territory of the people who went to war against them. Now God had promised them that he would give them the land of Canaan. And this is outside the land of Canaan. It's to the east of the Jordan River. They were not promised this territory initially. But when the king of Sihon, when Sihon, the king of the Amorites, attacked, he left himself vulnerable. And when the Israelites defeated him, They did what armies do. They took his territory. If he had not fought them, if he had simply said what Moab and Edom said, no, you can't pass, then they would have found another way to go. But by attacking, they basically said, we're going to fight you, and if you win, you can have our territory. And that's just what happened. God delivered Israel, second battle that they faced. And not only did they win the victory, but they won the land. And then in verse 33, we read, they turned and went up by the way to Bashan. So Og, the king of Bashan, went out against them, he and his people, to do battle at Edrei. Then the Lord said to Moses, don't be afraid, for I have delivered him into your hand with all his people and all his land, and you shall do to him as you did to Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt at Heshbon. So they defeated him, his sons, and all his people until there was no survivor left, and they took possession of the land. So here are two enemies that come against Israel. Both of them attack. Both of them are the aggressor. And God gives their territory to Israel. This became a part of their history. Now I know history is not a big topic here in the United States, and when it is taught, it's not history, it's mythology. Mythology that teaches our children to hate this country and to treat it with disrespect. But the Israelites were wiser than that. They taught genuine history. And so as we read through the rest of the Old Testament, we see reference to the victory over Og, the king of Bashan, and Sihon, king of the Amorites. In fact, it doesn't take very long, because in Joshua chapter 2, when the Israelites are first getting ready to conquer their first city in Canaan, the city of Jericho, Rahab says to them, we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were on the other side of the Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. Then in the book of Judges, a few generations into their history in the land of Canaan, the people of Israel are being oppressed by the Ammonites, and the Ammonites are claiming that Israel stole the land from Sihon and Og, and Jephthah knows his history, and he says, we didn't steal the land. They came out and attacked us. And as a result of their attacking us, we defeated them, and that's how we got the land. It wasn't our doing, it was their doing. Then in Nehemiah, hundreds of years later, after being exiled, the northern kingdom by Assyria and the southern kingdom by Babylon, Nehemiah, in a prayer in chapter 9, says to God, not only did you give us victory over Og, king of Bashan, and Sihon, king of the Ammonites, you gave their kingdoms and their nations to us, and you divided them into districts. And so we took possession of the land of Sihon, the land of the king of Heshbon, and the land of Og, the king of Bashan. Then there are two psalms that talk about the victory. Psalm 135, God defeated many nations, and he slew many kings, Sihon, king of the Amorites, Og, the king of Bashan, and all the kingdoms of Canaan. And in Psalm 136, he slew famous kings, for his mercy endures forever. Sihon, king of the Amorites, for his mercy endures forever. And Og, the king of Bashan, for his mercy endures forever. They were attacked. They prayed to God. God gave them the victory. This is how God's immune system works. He tells us that everything that happens to us will be used by God for his glory and for our good. Sometimes these things are done to teach us lessons, to develop our faith. God said to the Israelites when they entered the land of Canaan, I'm not going to wipe out all the enemies at once, because if I do that, then the next generation that comes along will forget how to fight. So I promise you the victory, but it's a victory you'll have to win generation after generation. But we forgot that lesson. We felt that victories were all won by our ancestors right up through the World War II, and now all we do is sit back and enjoy the fruits of their labors. But it doesn't work that way. And because we have forgotten how to fight, now we're back in a situation very similar to what our founding fathers faced, where our very liberty is threatened. And we have to learn those lessons all over again. But in all of these cases, Sihon, king of the Amorites, Og, king of Bashan, the enemy came, war was fought, and Israel had the victory. This is the way our immune system works when we're invaded by an organism, a flu or a virus or something of that nature. The body detects that invasion and it fights it off. And usually, aside from a few symptoms along the way, we don't really have a whole lot we have to worry about. Sometimes, as we've spoken of the last few weeks, the infection sets in, the enemy organism seems to win, we go to the doctor, he gives us medicine, a lot of times the medicine helps us. If the medicine doesn't help us, then we have to try even more drastic measures. But the point is, the body is given the ability to heal. And when these enemies come and make themselves known, we do what's necessary to fight them off. And spiritually, the same thing is true. God gives us the spiritual armor that we need to protect ourselves from the spiritual enemies that attack us, the spiritual and emotional and mental enemies that come against us, depression and sadness and distraction and things of that nature. But the really amazing thing about the immune system is how it works constantly, 24/7, and it often works so well that when our body is attacked, we don't even realize it because our immune system handles the attack without any symptoms developing. If we knew how often our bodies were threatened and how often our immune system took care of that threat without us ever knowing it, we would truly give praise to God for the miracle of healing that He has put in our bodies. And the same thing is true spiritually. There are spiritual forces arrayed against us, and when many people hear about this, they get paranoid. They get like Howard Hughes. They get like the person who's studying medicine or psychiatry. All of a sudden, all these spiritual forces are attacking them, and they feel the attack, and they feel very vulnerable, and they get very nervous. But the fact of the matter is, God has created us with an ability to fight off even spiritual forces, sometimes without even realizing that they're there. And that's what our second episode is all about, chapters 22 to 24. Now, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail in these chapters, but basically the story is this. Balak, who is king of Moab, and has already refused entry to the Israelites, begins to see how these other nations, when they fight against Israel, are being overwhelmed. He's beginning to feel maybe he was more fortunate than he realized that Israel was not willing to go to war with him. And he begins to wonder what will happen if they do decide to fight. What will happen if the soldiers say to themselves, "Well, look, we beat Og, king of Bashan. We beat Sihon, king of the Amorites. Why should we put up with what we got from Balak, king of the Moabites? Why should we put up with the insult of the Edomites who refused to allow us through their land? Why don't we just give it to them? Why don't we turn back and fight against them and take all their land too, because God is giving us victory everywhere we go. So Moab decides to be proactive, and Balak, their king, has an idea. So far, when these nations have heard about the victories that Israel has had over Egypt and crossing the Red Sea, over every enemy that has come against them so far, it's always been attributed to the God that they believe in. It's because of their faith in God and God's presence among them. So Balak says to himself, I know of a man who's a prophet, and he connects with all these different spiritual powers. And he can connect with the God of the Israelites, whose name they say is Yahweh. And maybe if I pay him enough, he will come, and in that God's name, he will curse Israel and they will lose their strength. It's sort of the same idea that the Philistines had when Samson came around. You know, his hair was long and he attributed his strength to his hair because it symbolized a vow he had taken from the time he was born. And when Delilah fussed with him, he gave two or three fake answers of where his strength lay. And she nagged him so much that finally he said, my strength is in my hair. And they cut his hair off and he was weak as anybody. And so Balak is sort of thinking along the same lines. He's thinking, if their power is in the spiritual realm, and if these nations that are doing battle in the physical realm are not winning, maybe if I take the battle to the spiritual level, maybe I can have the victory. And so he arranges with Balaam. He sends messengers to Balaam and says, I want you to come because there's a nation that is swarming over the wilderness like locusts and they're threatening our country. I want you to curse them for me. And if you curse them for me, I give you $1 million. And Balaam, he likes money. So he says, well, maybe I'll go. But first I have to ask this God, the God of the Hebrews, if he's willing to allow me to curse them. If I can curse them in his name. Because if I can't, then it doesn't matter what I say. It's not going to do any good. So he prays to the God of the Hebrews and says, how would it be if I go with these messengers and I curse Israel so that they're weak and they can be defeated? And God says, no, because they're precious to me. So he goes to the messengers and he says, I'm sorry, I can't do it. Their God refuses to allow me to curse them in his name. So Balak says, well, let's up the ante a little bit. How about if I give you $2 million? And Balaam says, well, it's worth asking. So he asks again. And God says, I already told you. No, they are precious to me. So when the messengers get back to Balak, Balak says, boy, this is a tough cookie. Okay, my best offer, $5 million. All you have to do, stand on a mountain. You're not going to be threatened. They're not even going to know you're there. You're going to stand on a mountain, not by yourself. You're going to curse them in the name of their own God. You're going to leave. They're not going to know it. Their protection will be gone, and I'll fight them, and I'll have the victory. Balaam says, well, okay, but I can only do it with God's approval. So a third time, he goes to God in prayer and he says, won't you please let me curse them in your name? And God says, go with these messengers, but say only what I give you to say. So he goes with them and Balak's, oh boy, this is good. He's going to curse them. So he goes and he sets up his altars on the hillside and he says, I've got to offer sacrifices. Now I have to go to God and I have to get the message that he wants me to say. Balak says, You do whatever hocus pocus you have to do. As long as you come back and curse them for me. So he sets up the altars. He goes to get the message from God. He comes back and this is the message God gives him. Balak brought me from Aram, the king of Moab from the eastern mountains. Come, he said, curse Jacob for me. Come, denounce Israel. How can I curse those whom God has not cursed? How can I denounce those whom the Lord has not denounced? From the rocky peaks I see them. From the heights I view them, a people who live apart and do not mingle with the nations. Who can number the dust of Jacob? Who can count the fourth part of Israel? Let me die the death of the righteous, and my end will be like theirs. Balak is like, what are you doing? I bring you here to curse them, and you bless them. Balaam says, didn't I tell you that I have to say whatever God puts in my mouth? I give Balaam credit. That at least he communicates what God gave him to communicate. So Balak says, okay, the problem is you don't see the threat. So we're going to go to another mountain peak where you can see more of the host of Israel. And then you can curse them for me. So he does. He takes them to another mountainside and he sees them. He's all right, set up the altars. Get the sacrifices ready. I'm going to go pray to God and see what he has to say. So he goes and God says, okay, you go and you tell him what I give you. So he says, okay, Balak, here's the message. And I really think that Balaam had ringing in his ears. Because I do. I have it all the time. And I'm convinced that that ringing is God sending me a message. You ever dial someone's number on the phone? Tammy's stepdad called us the other day. And he said, I think I got your fax machine. Because I dialed your number and I get this electronic sound. Like, well, it turned out he's dialing the wrong number. He had 540 instead of 570. So he got somebody's fax machine. So I'm thinking maybe that's what this ringing is. Maybe God is sending me a fax and I don't have my fax machine plugged in. But I haven't figured out how to do that yet. So all I've got is ringing. But there's Balaam and he's getting the message. And the message is this. Arise, Balak, and listen. Hear me, son of Zippor. God is not a man that he should lie, or a son of man that he should change his mind. He might also have said, he's also not a man that he takes a bribe. Does he speak and not act? Does he promise and not fulfill? I have received a command to bless. He has blessed, and I cannot change it. Then he blesses them. No misfortune is seen in Jacob, no misery observed in Israel. The Lord their God is with them. The shout of the king is among them. And then he goes to talk about how he brought them out of Egypt. And Balak says to Balaam, then don't curse them or bless them at all. Don't say anything. Balaam says, didn't I tell you I have to say what the Lord gives me? Balak, he don't like to give up. So he says, come, let me take you to one more place. Then you'll see the whole host of Israel. You'll see what a huge threat they are to everybody here in Canaan. To us on the east side of the Jordan River, to the Canaanites on the west side of the Jordan. You've got to curse them for me. Now, in chapter 24, it says, Balaam is finally wising up. When Balaam saw that it pleased the Lord to bless Israel, he did not resort to sorcery as at other times, but he turned his face to the desert. When Balaam looked out and saw Israel encamped tribe by tribe, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and this is what he said. How beautiful are your tents, O Jacob, your dwelling places, O Israel. Like valleys they spread out, like gardens beside a river, like aloes planted by the Lord, like cedars beside the waters. Water will flow from their buckets, their seeds will have abundant water. Their king will be greater than Agag. Their kingdom will be exalted. May those who bless you be blessed. May those who curse you be cursed. And Balak was angry. And he said, well, don't expect any money from me because you didn't do what I'm paying you to do. I would have rewarded you handsomely, but the Lord has kept you from getting your reward. Balaam said, didn't I tell the messengers you sent me that even if Balak gives me all the gold and silver in his kingdom, I can only say what the Lord has given me to say? I'm going back home, but come and let me warn you of what this people will do to your people in days to come. And then he uttered his fourth and most important oracle. He said, the oracle of Balaam, son of Beor, the oracle of one whose eyes see clearly, the oracle of one who hears the word of the Lord and has knowledge from the Most High, who sees a vision from the Almighty, who falls prostrate and whose eyes are opened. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star will come out of Jacob. A scepter will rise out of Israel. He will crush the heads of Moab, the skulls of all the sons of Sheth. Edom will be conquered. Seir will be conquered. But Israel will grow strong. A ruler will come out of Jacob and destroy the survivors of the city. Who can live when God does this? Ships will come from the shores of Kittim. They will subdue Asher and Eber, but they too will come to ruin. He's giving a prophecy that covers centuries and eventually includes the rise of the Messiah in Bethlehem and his return to rule the earth from Jerusalem, I believe, in our lifetime. Then Balaam got up and returned home, and Balak went his way. Now I have to warn you, in case you don't know your biblical history, this is not the last that we will see of either Balaam or Balak. But for now, their part in the story is over. And the fact that God turned what was meant to be a curse into a blessing also became a part of Israel's history. In Deuteronomy chapter 23, as Moses prepares the people to enter into Canaan, he encourages them to be strong and courageous because he says, remember what Balak tried to do through Balaam to curse you and bring you to ruin. But God turned his curse into a blessing. In Joshua chapter 24, which many people consider Joshua to be the sixth book of Moses, even though Moses didn't write it, they believe it's actually intended to be a part of the Torah because it talks about the completion of their settling in the land. And in chapter 24, when Joshua's about to die, and he's encouraging the people to carry on and be faithful to God in future generations, he reminds them, don't be afraid. Put your trust in God. What God promises, he will fulfill. Just remember what he did when Balak tried to get Balaam to curse the nation. God turned the curse into a blessing. And again in Nehemiah, just as I mentioned before, hundreds of years later, after exile and a return to the land, Nehemiah reminds the people that when you're faithful to God, this is what he does for you. When you live a holy life, you're strengthening your spiritual immune system. When you're dedicated to God, you're strengthening your spiritual immune system. When you love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, when you love God more than you love even yourself, this is what strengthens your spiritual immune system. And in the same way that God turned the curse of Balak into a blessing through the mouth of Balaam, so the immune system that he has created in our spiritual being turns the curses of this world into blessings. Do you think maybe David has come across some curses in the last few months? Do you think maybe with this past election and with his telling the truth about Governor Wolf and his policies that maybe he's made some enemies, like the Daily Idol? Do you think maybe there are people that mutter curses under their breath? I think it's because of that that many people who should have been issuing warnings over the last generation have been scared into silence because they know the enemy is there and they know these things are being said about them and they just want to be liked. But every now and then someone comes along and says there's something more important than being liked, and that's being right. And sometimes when you're right, it makes enemies. Do you remember what the Apostle Paul said when he wrote to the Galatians? He presented the gospel to the Galatians. The gospel is our spiritual immune system. It is our salvation. It is our sanctification. It is our justification. All these things that protect us from the curses of Satan, who's trying to undo every work that God does. And then as soon as he leaves, what do? They throw the gospel away and they start thinking that the way to be strong spiritually is to keep the Sabbath, is to pray in certain ways with certain words, to eat certain foods and not eat other foods. And when Paul hears about it, he writes the letter to the Galatians. And if you want to see Paul when he's angry, read that letter. Because he is fit to be tied. He said, I gave you the gospel, which is your spiritual protection, and you threw it away, thinking that you can create a better protection. That's what we're doing with COVID. We actually think we can defeat this organism. We actually think that by staying home, this organism is going to go away. No organism has ever gone away. It's only been strengthened by people who are not allowing their immune system to accustom itself. So, what do? Paul said to the Galatians, your hope and your strength is in God, not in yourself. Your hope and your strength is in the fruit of the Spirit that grows within you because of the Spirit God has given. But he knows it's not what the people want to hear. There are people who take pride in how spiritual they appear through these spiritual exercises that they do. So what does Paul say? He says what? Have I become your enemy because I tell you the truth? There was also a prophet of Israel, Elijah, who had the same problem with the king of the northern kingdom of Israel. When King Ahab met up with him, he says, oh, there he is, the disruptor of our people. And Elijah says, I'm not the one disrupting the people. You're disrupting them by teaching them to believe in a false god. Our immune system is strengthened by truth. And our immune system is rooted in the God who is God. And when we trade that God for false gods, when we become distracted by the false gods that the world offers, then our immune system gets weak and we're not protected. But when we trust in God, what happens in our lives often follows the same pattern of what happened to Israel. They didn't even know they had a threat. They didn't know that Balak was working behind the scenes to try to bring Balaam down from what today is modern-day Iraq, to get him to come down and curse the people. I mean, that's how famous he was. That's how successful he claimed to be in the work that he did of cursing and blessing. Israel's minding their own business in the wilderness, getting ready to cross into the land. They don't know that they've got a supercharged spiritual power on that mountain ready to throw a curse down at them. And instead of cursing them, God turns the curse into a blessing. There's a proverb that says, like a flitting sparrow or a fluttering swallow, an undeserved curse goes nowhere. This is a proverb that's saying the same thing that this episode is teaching us from Balaam and Balak. You don't know how many spiritual enemies you have. You don't know the things that right this moment Satan is whispering into God's ear in the throne room of heaven. Remember the first two chapters of Job? The Bible tells us that Satan is accusing the brethren day and night before the throne of God. It sounds pretty serious. What is our protection against an enemy like that? Our protection is twofold. First, the Spirit within us is praying on our behalf. And secondly, Jesus is sitting at the right hand of the Father, whispering in his other ear. This is why you don't need to attack these people spiritually, because they're covered by my blood. And there's a third source of strength that we have, and that is God himself. He doesn't need to be convinced to turn a curse into a blessing for our sake. He's the one who chose us. He's the one who sent his son. He's the one who accepted that sacrifice on the cross and gave him his life back again. This is the immune system that God has built into every believer. It's an immunity against sin. It's an immunity against condemnation. The first verse of the 8th chapter of Romans says it more clearly than I ever could. There is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. Everything Satan throws into our lives to try to curse us, to try to pull us away from God, God turns that curse into a blessing. And we're not even aware of it, because we don't have the spiritual eyes to see. And maybe this is why God does not give us spiritual insight. Because if we saw all the threats, if we heard all the curses, if we realize the spiritual dangers that we face every day, we'd be afraid to do anything, to go anywhere. We'd be afraid to get out of bed. As it is, the only thing that makes me not want to get out of bed is laziness, because I like being warm on a cold morning. But the curses that Satan is trying to throw at us, that he's using other people to throw at us, that he's having other people even pray to our God to say, this person, you should curse him because he doesn't deserve your love. A lot of us had those curses going against us when we first started this church, from people who thought we were wrong and who thought we needed to be stopped. But God turned their curses into the blessing that we enjoy now. This is the love God has for us, that he would put into our spiritual system a protection that turns the curses of the enemy into blessings. Now, this doesn't mean nothing bad will ever happen to us. What it does mean is that when bad things do happen, our first recourse is to do what the Israelites did and pray to God, Lord, we're being attacked. And if you help us against this attack, we need your help because we don't have the strength or the wisdom to face it on our own. God says, don't worry, I've got you covered. But then sometimes he opens our eyes as we look back on our lives and we see things that could have happened to us. And we realize God was there. He had our back. He protected us. He turned what could have been a curse into a blessing. And some of those are the greatest blessings of all. Because we are covered by a promise that says, in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who are called according to his purpose. No wonder the scripture says, fear not, you have no reason to be afraid, because I've got you covered. Father, we thank you for creating us in such a way that we are protected against threats we are not even aware of. That we need not worry about spiritual enemies because we know we have a spiritual champion who gives us the victory. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.